I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway. Photos and videos of adults and children sprawled on floors and in stairwells circulated widely this past weekend, suggesting another chemical weapons attack by the Assad regime in Syria. Those images have not been independently verified, but the alleged attack took place in Douma, the last rebel-held town in eastern Ghouta, just 12 miles east of Damascus. The Takeaway spoke with Dr. Jad Salem, a board member of the Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations International in Dubai, who's been in touch with doctors on the ground in Ghouta.
So this is the first time in Ghouta since 2013 where people are killed in such a horrible way. People are asphyxiated to death. You could see in their bodies the suffering, cyanosis, change of color, prominent eyes. Like, it's a horrible form of dying. We cannot afford, we human being, that somebody kill our fellow human in such a horrible way.
Aid groups reported that more than 40 people suffocated and said symptoms were consistent with nerve or chlorine gas exposure. I spoke with Liz Sly, who's the Beirut bureau chief for the Washington Post.
It's extremely difficult to confirm absolutely that it is a chemical attack because the place where this took place, eastern Ghouta, is completely surrounded by government troops. There haven't been Western journalists there in years. And in recent weeks, as the government's been advancing towards it, a lot of the media activists who normally put out a lot of materials about these things have themselves been evacuating under various deals aimed at securing their surrender. And we haven't even had as much material on this attack as we usually get. But the videos seem pretty convincing that these people did not die in bombings or anything else, that there were large numbers of bodies piled up in basements and in like what looks like inside rooms they were sheltering from the bombing, and that they did die from some form of chemical.
Have you managed to hear anything from sources on the ground, from victims or families or people who you keep in touch with?
What we've heard is from the rescue workers that they found these people after a seemingly fairly large device was dropped by a helicopter and it landed on a building. It went through the roof of a building and appears to have spilled some kind of toxic gas into the building, and that the people inside suffocated from whatever the substance was that was released.
Liz, the Assad government has denied the use of chemicals here, and Russia, of course, their key ally, has supported that denial. How credible are those claims?
Well, they've denied all the chemical attacks that have happened, and there's been a lot of investigations into this from the United Nations, and they've all come up with pretty conclusive evidence that the Assad regime has used gas, so we kind of would expect them to deny it, because they always do.
Liz, you mentioned some of the photos and videos that the outside world has seen of apparent victims. We've seen graphic photos and videos over the weekend of young children lying on the floor, many with serious injuries, their eyes burning, apparently children crying. Who were the apparent victims of this attack? You mentioned that a canister was dropped on a building. Is there any idea why these particular people appear to have been targeted?
Well, in all the attacks, all the chemical attacks we've seen, it's been civilians who got hit. There were a lot of civilians living, maybe 100,000 civilians living cramped in a very tiny area, surrounded by government forces with the rebels inside. The government has been bombarding them randomly and without discrimination for rebels or military target or civilian targets for weeks and weeks now. And more, well over 1,000 people have died in that bombing. So it does look like they were just fulfilling the military target that they have, which is to empty the area. They want to finish the battle. The rebels there have been refusing to do a deal. Hours after their chemical attack yesterday, they did say they would surrender, and they started leaving the area today. So it does look like militarily it might have been quite a successful tactical use of a chemical weapon to force the capitulation of rebels living in an area where there are many civilians who are the ones suffering from the fighting.
And can you put this in context of the larger war, Liz? Douma and eastern Ghouta, the apparent surrender of rebels in that area, as you said, how does this fit into the broader campaign?
Well, it fits into the broad trajectory of the Assad regime's victory over the rebels, which has been very slow in coming. It's taken 7 years and it's not over yet. But block by block, city by city, town by town, they are taking back the areas that turned against Assad in 2011. And this is a big victory for them because it's the biggest area outside Damascus, the capital, that had fallen under rebel control. And they've been unable to take it till now. But now they've pretty much secured the perimeter of the capital. And there's really no major threat left to Assad in Damascus.
Liz Sly, Beirut Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. Liz, thank you.
Thank you.
We go now to Robert Ford, who served as ambassador to Syria from 2011 to 2014. He's currently a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute and Yale University. Ambassador, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Well, Ambassador, President Trump said on Twitter yesterday that President Putin, Russia, and Iran are responsible for backing Animal Assad. Big price to pay. Those are the president's words. Now, it got a lot of attention, primarily, it seems, because it was the first time that the president had criticized Vladimir Putin by name. But is there a coherent message from President Trump about what exactly that means, big price to pay?
Well, I think the entire world is wondering what President Trump means by it. I think everyone is wondering whether or not there will be some kind of American military strike. Right now, it's not yet clear.
Well, what are the realistic options for a response?
I think it is possible to deter Bashar al-Assad from using chemical weapons. President Trump launched a heavy strike a year ago, and for a time, the Syrian government stopped using chemical weapons. But the Syrian government is such that it always tests to find out where's the edge of the envelope. So after that last American strike a year ago, it waited a few months, then it used a small amount of chemical weapons over here and a small amount over there and gradually built up a little more here, a little more there, testing. The Americans didn't do anything. So if we want to deter the Syrian government from using chemical weapons, we have to strike them each time they test us even a little bit until Assad understands that the Americans will react and he thinks twice and he thinks even three times before he tells his military to use chemical weapons.
Ambassador, didn't the United States signal a long time ago that it had already acquiesced to the Assad regime, that even if there are strikes in response to a chemical weapons attack, I mean, there's a criticism that those strikes would simply be a cost of doing business. A base gets destroyed, a factory gets destroyed, and Assad remains.
Well, I think we need to separate two different foreign policy objectives. One is removing Bashar al-Assad from power, and I'm in the camp that argues that that is no longer possible for us to achieve. He's distasteful, but he's going to stay. He's captured the major population centers. But there's a second foreign policy objective, which is to deter the use of chemical weapons in Syria and do it in such a way that dictators and authoritarian governments in other parts of the world who are certainly watching Syria also are deterred from using chemical weapons.
Now, there's been plenty of criticism of President Trump that the actual message has been quite the opposite to the one that you're advocating, Ambassador, because just prior to this attack, President Trump announced that he was considering withdrawing all U.S. troops from Syria. And John McCain, among other people, said that that very announcement has given Assad the green light for atrocities like this, knowing the Americans are on the way out. How do you view it?
Well, with all due respect to Senator McCain, who truly is an American hero, but with all due respect to him, I think he's quite wrong. The Syrian government has been using chemical weapons, as I said, regularly during this 7-year conflict, using it regularly. They didn't start after Trump said he was going to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. They've been using it long before that. So I think it is important for America to be realistic about what it can achieve in Syria. I know Senator McCain would like to compel Assad to leave power, but short of a massive U.S. intervention that likely would require ground forces and would put us directly eyeball to eyeball in confrontation with Russian forces deployed now in Syria, there is no way for the Americans to compel Bashar al-Assad to leave the Syrian presidential palace. We have to be realistic about that.
Ambassador, talk about what's at stake outside of these two countries, the long-term damage to the norms against the use of chemical weapons, and how important an American response is here.
Well, that, I think, is the underlying American national security interest with respect to the use of chemical weapons in Syria. It is, of course, a moral outrage, and no one who sees these pictures of Syrian civilian dead can help but being moved by them. But dating back to World War I, when we had tens of thousands of American soldiers killed and in many cases permanently injured because of chemical weapons use on the battlefronts in World War I, there has been an international consensus that chemical weapons should not be used. And there have been occasions here and there since then. Saddam Hussein, for example, used them against the Kurds in Iraq. But for the most part, that consensus has held, that agreement. And I fear that Assad's using chemical weapons regularly, very visibly, and with basically impunity, threatens that consensus in a way we have not seen since World War I.
Robert Ford, ambassador to Syria from 2011 to 2014, currently with the Middle East Institute and Yale University. Ambassador, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.